Today's case show will be on case 19 in the Wu Mong Kan. Case 19 is entitled Nonsense, Ordinary Mind is the Way. Joshu asked Nansen, what is the way? Ordinary mind is the way, Nansen replied. Shall I try to seek after it, Joshu said. If you try for it, you will become separated from it, responded Nansen. How can I know the way unless I try for it, persisted Joshu. Nansen said, the way is not a matter of knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion, not knowing is confusion. When you have really reached the true way beyond doubt, you will find it is as vast and boundless as outer space. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong? With these words, Joshu came to a sudden realization. Mumon's comment, Nansen dissolved and melted away before Joshu's questions, and could not offer a plausible explanation. Even though Joshu comes to a realization, he must delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully understand it. Mumon's verse, the spring flowers, the autumn smoke, snow, I'm sorry, the spring flowers, the autumn moon, summer breezes, winter snow. If useless things do not clutter your mind, you have the best days of your life. So, today is day two of our sesshin. And generally, this is a more challenging, one of the more challenging days of the sesshin. Often on day two, people begin to grow tired, and that's probably happening to you. I think sesshin is really an amazing invention because the mind really does have, you know, this self-purifying quality, self-enlightening quality. Just going through this process over 5 days brings us to a very different place. And the challenge is always just to find a way to trust the process long enough for the change to take place. So it's definitely the case that around day two, people are feeling tired, their legs hurt, and so on and so on. Yet, you know, as I say, if you just trust the process, something wonderful is going to happen to you. Or not. Right? Or not. we are very goal-directed people. You know, very goal-directed people. One of the best-selling books, one of the best-selling religious books in the United States is a book called The Purpose-Driven Life. The Purpose-Driven Life. And basically, the title says it all, right? That you need to have a purpose in life and you need to pursue it as a driven person pursues his or her goal. And this is very, very much how people in our society think. You know, the idea is that our destiny is in our hands if we only try hard enough. And that basically it's important to have clear goals so that you can pursue your goals. Now, you know, there are some good things about this attitude. It's so deeply part of Western culture and part of our culture, you know. But I do think we should be skeptical about that. My I I have many jobs, and one of my jobs is dealing with students who are going to be English majors or writing majors. And I have had a number of encounters with students who went into the School of Engineering intending to be engineers. And they probably didn't necessarily want to be engineers. I think their parents definitely wanted them to be engineers. And so they made that decision. I don't know if you have a chance just to digress. I'm only a few minutes into the Taisho, but I already want to digress. I don't know if you had this chance to see a wonderful movie called The Big Sick, but it's a fantastic movie, and I highly recommend it. It's about a Pakistani American boy, young man, and he falls in love with an American woman. And his girlfriend and he don't intend to fall in love because his parents want him to marry a Pakistani woman. And basically he and this other woman, this American woman, just fall in love. And he has to come to terms with the fact that something unexpected has happened to him. And the movie is really hilarious because his mother is constantly trying to set him up with Pakistani women, this young unmarried Pakistani woman. And so when he's always over to have dinner with his parents, his mother will, the doorbell will ring. And his mother will say, "Who could that be?" And who comes in but this charming, lovely Pakistani woman? "Come in. What a surprise. Would you like dinner?" And it's clear to the son that he's, you know, his mom loves him and wants him to meet the right person. But he knows every time he goes over there, it's going to be somebody new that his mom has set up. And sometimes even the parents, she goes, "Oh my gosh, look who's here." You know, it's the parents and the daughter. And he also wants to be a comedian, right? And his parents came here from Pakistan, and they've worked terribly, terribly hard. You know, his father tells, you know, we learned the story that the dad came here, and in order to practice his profession, he had to go back to school at 50 and get licensed. So they're really hardworking parents, and they just can't believe that their son is going to be wants to be a stand-up comedian. And the son has this wonderful comedy routine where he's talking about growing up in his native country. And he says, "You know, I want to be a stand-up comedian." He said, "Every Pakistani mother and father have a hierarchy in their minds, right? The highest thing for your child to be is a doctor," he says. "So doctor is number one. Number two is engineer. Number three is lawyer." And then he said, "Then there's like 20 different professions." And then he says, "Now remember, he's a Muslim." So he says, "Then next is working for ISIS." and he says, "And below that is stand-up comedian." So I love that joke, right? So you know, he's doing everything he's doing the worst thing his parents could imagine for him. And of course, to complicate it even more, he's fallen in love with this American woman. And it's really the story of there. I won't spoil the movie for you. I'm not getting to any of the key details. I've just really ruined one joke. But the point is, you know, he has struggles, right? I mean, he's trying to be a successful stand-up comedian, and you know, that's a very competitive field, and lots of people spend their lives working comedy clubs, and they never have a special on HBO, and so on, you know. And he's with other stand-up comedians, and it's hard for him to justify what he's doing to his parents, and even a little bit to himself, right? I think a lot of these students who come in to see me also are in the same situation. You know, their parents, they're not, some of them are from the subcontinent, but a lot of them are just, regular Euro-American kids, you know. And their parents, too, also had a hierarchy. An engineer was at the top. And they also have to justify their decision to become, of all things, an English major, you know, which their parents probably see as a kiss of death, you know. The parents, sometimes I even have to talk to the parents, you know. People are very upset, you know, why are you making this terrible decision, and so on. But on the other hand, you know, sometimes these students are really articulate. You know, they're going through these classes that don't have any interest, they don't have any interest in. They're going through the motions because it's expected. And they maybe take an English class where they read something and it lights them up, right? They go through a crisis. You know, sometimes they're feeling very nervous about this and their parents are upset. And some of them do indeed become majors and some become minors. They continue to go into engineering, so they're electrical engineer with a, you know, literature minor. And that makes everybody happy, right? But this kind of attention happens to us all the time in life, right? You know, we often do things because we think other people, especially our parents, want us to do them. And we grow up often doing what we think we should be doing or wanting what we think we should be wanting. It's very difficult sometimes to know what we really want. You know, we often find ourselves doing things, you know, that are what we were supposed to do, but then, you know, maybe not so satisfying. So, you know, I've talked before about one of my friends is a brain scientist and a doctor, John Sunston. And even though many Pakistani parents want their children to be doctors, John Sunston's parents wanted him to be a musician, right? A great pianist, like his dad. And his sister was a Broadway actress. I haven't mentioned that before, but his sister was on Broadway and was a big star. She was married to another big Broadway actor I'm sure you've never heard of, named Burgess Meredith, who... basically John's whole family were these highly cultured, very successful people from the arts, and he was like the odd man out because he wanted to be a doctor. You know, what a weirdo. So, you know, it was very hard for John. You know, even today, I was talking to my friend John last week, and he's now 80 years old. And he said, you know, I still, when I think about growing up in my house, I still feel like I wasn't measuring up to my parents' expectations. This is something he said to me just last week. You know, even though many people would envy the life my friend has lived, you know, he feels like he always missed the boat because he didn't do what his parents wanted him to do, you know. And that's a common situation. You know, it's hard for us to know what we really want to do. It's hard for us because, you know, when you ask people, what do you really want to do, you know, often they say what they think they should say, or they even believe that they want to be an engineer, or they believe they want to be a doctor till they get to be an engineer, or till they get to be a doctor. You know, now I'm not trying to discourage you if you want to be a doctor. So let me just say, my friend, my best friend in the world, John Zunston, is a doctor. So I think being a doctor is a wonderful profession. But it's just an example of a socially sanctioned goal that we may or may not be pursuing because we really want it. And we don't necessarily even know what we really want, right? Because it's so hard to separate what we think we should want from what we really do want. It's hard to do that. It definitely comes with a cost if you decide not to do what people say. You know, so if you decide to be odd or not, you sort of be an odd person, do something that, if your parents are Pakistani immigrants and you decide to become a stand-up comedian, you have a lot of pressure. And you might decide at some point, you know, this is not working out. Maybe I should go to law school after all, take my GREs or LSATs and go to law school after all. It is interesting. You know, they do research. Sociologists do research on doctors, and they find doctors have fairly high rates of job dissatisfaction. Now, some of this is caused by their conditions of work. So we have a member of our group who comes to sit every week, at least once a week. And he is an ER physician, and he is a wonderful man. And he was working for one hospital that actually downsized and got rid of him. And he's a 50-year-old guy. He's an expert at his field. And he had to get another job. And his current job is not great. He often, when he meditates, he has to struggle with, tensions on the workplace. You know, he's one example of why doctors are unhappy. But lots of doctors are unhappy because they didn't really want to be doctors. You know, they were just living out somebody's dream, somebody else's dream, right? And it's very hard for us to know what we really are, who we really are, what we really want. And it's especially hard because we don't necessarily trust ourselves. Right? We don't necessarily trust ourselves. You know, we're told you really have to have a plan, you know, in life. You have to have a goal, and you have to pursue that goal single-mindedly. Right? This is the model in our culture, you know. So basically, we admire people who have this kind of single-minded determination. And you will meet people all the time who say, yes, you know, when I was 12, I decided I wanted to be such and such, and that's what I am now. And sometimes that's a good thing, but you know, sometimes that's not such a good thing. Because, you know, we change and grow all the time. And, you know, living out your 12-year-old dream might not be the best thing for you, right? I'm not saying people shouldn't pursue their goals, but I'm saying people need to know themselves, right? Know themselves, and that's very difficult. You know, so one thing about Zazen, I think, one benefit of what we're doing is that you begin to know yourself a little better. You know, it's often the case that when we're working on the cushion with the breath or with Mu or with a koan, you know, we're confronting things in ourselves that we didn't necessarily want to encounter, right? Things we didn't necessarily want to admit are there, you know. And one of the reasons koans, not always, but one of the reasons koans can be difficult to work with is that we don't necessarily want to open that door in ourselves, right? We don't necessarily want to open that door in ourselves. So, you know, I have been, I have had people come to sesshins who basically left sesshin and filed for divorce. That actually happened, you know, once. And that's a scary thing to do, but you know, this was a person who was very, very, very unhappy. And in the course of sesshin, you know, allowed himself to see his unhappiness. It was something he had never allowed himself to see. And or he didn't permit himself to see his unhappiness. Even though he was very unhappy, he wanted to see himself as a happy person in his relationship. And at some point in the sesshin, you know, it suddenly occurred to him that he was very unhappy in his relationship. And you know, and that was a painful discovery, right? Because his image of himself was not a person who is going to go get divorced. But and he did get divorced, you know. And, you know, that's a painful situation. But, you know, it is also very difficult to live a falsehood about yourself, right? So you know, in that case, a person got divorced. But on the other hand, there have been other kinds of experiences people have had on the cushion where they move in the other direction. You know, a couple times people have gotten married, you know. So you know, people discover things about themselves they don't necessarily know. Maybe people define themselves as, you know, I want to be a celibate priest all my life. And then you go to a sesshin and you realize, you know, actually I'd like to be know what marriage is about. You know, so that's a kind of opening a door that you didn't expect to open or maybe even want to open. And when people don't open doors in themselves, they get trapped, you know, trapped. So, you know, there are people I have interacted with as a Zen teacher who are truly trapped. You know, so there was somebody who doesn't sit with our group anymore, but a long time ago sat with our group. And she was basically like a writer. And she was working on this novel and had made a lot of sacrifices to write this novel. And, you know, at first, this novel was like a two-year project, and then it turned into a five-year project, and then it turned into a 10-year project. And, you know, I think it's a 20-year project. And it's possible, right, that this person, you know, this person is going to die, and they'll find this novel in the drawer, and they'll say, oh my gosh, you know, this is the greatest novel ever written, but I don't think that's the case. You know, I think this is a person who is not facing something in herself, right? Something in herself. So, you know, if you are, you might be using your writing your great novel as a way of avoiding other kinds of fears, right? So you know, I would see this person sometimes and I would say, why don't you take a break from writing your novel? No, I've got to write the novel. I'm almost finished, right? You know, year later, how's it going with the novel? Oh, plugging away. Year later, how's it going with the novel? Almost finished. I'm almost getting there. A year later, how's it going? This is a real person. You know, so you know, at some point you realize this person doesn't want to end the novel because when the novel is over, then there's this big empty space. And you say, what do I do with the rest of my life? You know, I also see this in school. You know, in English departments, you have people who are going for a PhD. And they start in graduate school. And sometimes it takes 8 years, even 9 years to finish your dissertation. But you do meet people who have been working on their dissertation for 20 years. And you realize that the dissertation is their excuse for not facing something else. See, something else. The endless dissertation, the endless book. See, it, once I can't finish this book because my life will be meaningless, right? So it would be so much better for those people if they just said, okay, you know, I'm going to stop writing this novel and try to find out what I really want to do with my life. Or try something new, you know, try something new. But, you know, they have a goal-oriented mentality, right? So, you know, it is important in life to have goals, but it's also important to know who we really are. You know, and when you sit on the cushion and you practice zazen, little by little you discover things about yourself you might not have wanted to encounter. And you open doors in yourself, and sometimes it can be painful and difficult. But you know, having that self-understanding is so valuable because it allows us to act from a place which is no longer divided. Right? You know, when you're doing something from that place in yourself that's genuine, you know, you don't have a divided mind. You know, when you have a divided mind, that usually means that you're maybe acting out a role that isn't authentically you yourself, you know. The world is full of really great composers and painters and writers whose names no one knows. You know, this is actually the case, you know. I went for a job interview once, one of my competitors, he really wasn't a good person for the job. I was waiting to go into a hotel room, and he was waiting to go into an interview, same place. And we got to talking, and he said, yeah, his name was Jack Cady, C-A-D-Y. And he said, I've written 5 novels, you know, 5 novels. And I had never heard of Jack Cady. When I went home, I researched Jack Cady, and his books were all really well-reviewed, you know, books. But he was trying to get a job, the same job I was trying to get as an English teacher at a very junior level, you know. And I have had the chance to read one of his novels, and they're just fantastic, you know. My sister-in-law is a painter. She is an amazing, amazing artist. If you say, have you ever heard of Sydney Sutman, you will never hear anybody who knows her name. I think Jack Cady was doing something really wonderful, which was, you know, he was acting from the place, a place deep within himself, that was truly alive. And I think that's true for my sister-in-law. I think my sister-in-law, you know, has made works of great beauty and has had a life of great joy because she has been true to her true nature. You know, that deep part of herself. You know, if you're living from that place in yourself, then, you know, actually success or failure doesn't really matter. It sounds crazy to say this, but it really shouldn't matter. You know, what should matter is being true to your true nature. But you can't be true to your true nature if you don't know how to find that place in yourself which is, you know, truly alive. And no longer divided mind. You know, when we talk about Zen, you know, these koans, they often involve a person having a deep enlightenment experience. You know, even in this case, right? Joshu has a little bit of a kensho at the end of his encounter with Nansen. But you know, really, that's a, maybe not a good thing sometimes for Zen to talk so much about kensho or realization. Because, you know, there's something very important about Zen that isn't necessarily going to produce earth-shattering insight. It's learning how to live from this place of truth, you know, of truth in ourselves. You know, when you're on day one of Sashin, it's sometimes very difficult to be in that place. You know, you might be living out in your daily life all kinds of expectations, you know. Hard to be truthful to ourselves or about ourselves under certain circumstances. But by around day three of Sashin, you know, we begin to become, I think, more genuine. You know, it becomes possible to have a deep and intimate relationship with our true nature and to act from that place or to be in that place. You know, we don't look at each other. We're not playing roles in our interactions with each other. You know, we're simply here actually to sit deeply and enter samadhi and work through our obstacles. You know, this is a safe space. You know, people can open doors that they might not open under other circumstances. But, you know, it's often the case that people do begin to feel more alive at Sashin. And that's an odd thing, really. I mean, people often, even mostly, leave Sashin very happy and happier than when they came. It's not always the case, but I would say probably like 90%. And that's an odd thing, right? Because first of all, you know, you don't get any money for attending Sashin. In fact, you actually have to pay money. And also, you don't get any kind of an award, right? You don't get a certificate of achievement or a completion, right? You know, there's no title. You know, there's no title that comes with doing this, right? You won't get a raise at work. You can't put on your, you know, when you put yourself up for promotion, you can't list attended sessions as professional development, right? And yet people leave here, they're happier. There's nothing to be gained from doing this, but somehow people feel happier. And I think that's really interesting, right? That in some ways, the most liberating things people do are not things that are goal-directed, right? You know, basically, hiking is something like that too. If you like to go out into nature, you like to hike. You know, I'm an avid hiker, and I hike with other people, and we all carry these heavy packs, and we walk for 60 miles, and we are covered with sweat, and we lie down on rocky ground and complain about it in the morning. It's like, you think you pitched on a big rock. Mine was solid rock, you know. So, basically, at the end of it all, so alive, right? Why is that? It's definitely the case that people manage to combine sometimes what they do in their professional lives with this kind of freedom. That's definitely the case. So you will meet people who are able to bring both of these things together. I think it's not always the case because people don't understand themselves, don't live from this place, you know. So coming to Sashin is sort of reminding yourself what it's like to live from this place, which is really like this place of freedom. You know, even children. You know, when children are, you know, children play. You know, and some of the happiest moments in people's childhood are moments of play, right? And I actually think that play is the most mature relationship we can have to our lives. And that's actually a Zen view too. That, you know, actually, when people say, I really take this seriously, from the Zen standpoint, we think that's an immature viewpoint. See, the most advanced, we would say in Zen, the person who's basically got the most deep understanding is somebody who understands that this, all things humans do are play. Pretend, but real pretend. You know, so it doesn't, you know, we feel most alive, I think, when we get closest to this spirit of like play. When we, you know, when it stops, when the goal stops being the point and the process becomes the point. Now you can spoil it, right? I mean, look, it's definitely the case that, you know, when I was a kid, we used to play baseball. And all the kids in our neighborhood would get together and play baseball, and I was always one of the last people to be chosen for either side. You know, there would always be like the unathletic kids, and they would pick sides, and they would say, who's going to take Kurt and who's going to take Fred, right? And, well, we had Kurt last time, you get him this time. So I was the one, when the pop-up ball, fly ball was coming my way, everybody already knew I was not going to get it. Right? Nevertheless, I enjoyed playing ball. And, you know, what ruins playing ball is taking it too seriously, right? Taking it too seriously. And you know, in Little League, anxious helicopter parents who are competitive and trapped in a very unhealthy mindset have ruined baseball for their kids, right? They have taken it from play and made it a goal-directed competitive activity. See, and you can do that with Zen too. You know, you can be competitive in your Zen practice. You can push yourself on in your Zen practice too. You know, I have had students who, you know, if they didn't answer their koan every sesshin, they were very upset. As a Zen teacher, I would feel a lot of pressure to pass them, right? Because the sesshin is ending, and it's like I can see them getting more and more upset, you know, and. But, you know, and it's hard to say, you know, this actually happened. There was one session where I didn't pass this guy. He's not my student anymore, but he was literally hopping mad. He was hopping mad. And to top it off, you know, what happened, it worked like this. He didn't, in the morning, he came in for Dokusan, and I didn't pass him, and he was very upset because the session was ending. And then he wanted to come back for round two in the afternoon, right, before the last day of session, people can come in. And the woman in front of him was in there for like 15 minutes. And he was sitting on his cushion thinking, I've got to get in there, you know. And when he didn't, I came out here and I could see his face. It was like there was steam coming out of his ears. So, you know, it's very possible to turn anything into that where are the results? Where are the results? You know, I went to Sesshin, I got nothing out of this. You know, I didn't answer a single goddamn koan. So let me just say that person didn't educate himself, right? He's just acting out the way people in our culture have trained everybody to behave. You know, basically we're supposed to have a goal, pursue it relentlessly. And if you don't attain it, you are a loser, a loser. See? So naturally, nobody wants to be a loser, and he was terrified. By the way, when this person had, quote-unquote, he eventually broke with me. I can be candid about it. And he basically said, I invested all this time in Zen, really. I swear he actually said that. I invested all this time and money in Zen, you know. And what have I got out of it? You know,
love kiss. You know.
So, you know, he ruined his Zen practice, right? This is one of the rare opportunities for us to be free and to play in a way that's really liberating. It's the best, one more thing. You know, I've been married for 40 years. And, when my wife and I got married, we really wanted to do it by the book. So, we read all these books about marriage and we really, we made ourselves ill trying to be a good marriage, and finally we just threw the books away. It's like, who cares what they say? Who cares, what they say? You know, why don't we just try to find a way of being together that we enjoy? See, there isn't really such a thing as marriage. It's an invention. It's a game that people play. And if you take it too seriously, you can make yourself very unhappy. But if you realize this is a game, what would give my partner, what would make her happy? What would make her happy? And maybe it might not be something that would make other people happy, but maybe doing something that would make her happy, she'd be happy, you'd be happy. It might not be the conventional thing, right? It might not be what other people might like. But who cares? We're here for what? Maybe if we're lucky, we're here for 80 years, right? Maybe 90 in some cases. My friend John is going strong. But, our whole life could be like this. In the Tibetan tradition, they have this mandala, right? This mandala is such a great teaching. Because, you create this beautiful structure that requires so much effort and so much attention. You can't get any of the grains in the wrong place. They actually use colored grains of sand, and they have little funnels that they tap, and one grain at a time comes out. Really, it's like little grains come out. And they do this giant design on the ground that takes days and days of work. And then they just take a broom and swish it all up, and the wind blows it away. And that's such a deep teaching. If you're a goal-directed person, you could find that could give you a nervous breakdown, right? But wait, you did all that work for what? But you see, it was the process that was so enlivening, right? It was the process that was liberating and that sets you free. And maybe people have to do a lot of mandalas before they realize this, Maybe, the first one you think it's perfect, and then the guy sweeps it away, and you're, oh my God, you just destroyed my work, You do that 10 times, and you realize, what really matters is just being with, you're with these other monks, hopefully they're your friends, you're trying out some new ideas, you're creating some beautiful designs, people come, and you make their day, you make them happy. What more could you ask for? So yes, you need to try. When you come to Sesshin, you need to sit down on the cushion, you need to focus on your breath. But if we're too goal-directed, we're not open to the possibilities of our life as it unfolds. Lots of people who are there's a wonderful psychologist whose name is Gilbert. And he wanted to be a screenwriter. And he was trying to get into a screenwriting class with this very famous screenwriter, and it was over-enrolled, so by accident he took a psychology course, and he's like a Harvard psychologist right now. So it was just an accident. If he had been too single-minded in his pursuit of his goal, he wouldn't be living the wonderful creative life he has now. So, goals are good, but the most important thing is acting from our true nature. This place in ourselves that's alive and uncontrived. So, you know, today is day two. We're still between, we're still sort of between one world and another. But in another day, it would be possible to be really living from that place in yourself. So please keep practicing with diligence.